Vanessa did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across East of England as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in England, healthcare training places sit empty while people who want to become nurses cannot access the courses that would put them on hospital wards. The buildings exist, the tutors exist, the need exists. What does not exist is the political will to connect them.
I grew up on the Alton Goldhay estate watching my gran fight for every breath in her final months on Cavell Ward at Peterborough City Hospital. The nurses there were everything to our family. They knew when to hold her hand and when to give us space. They explained what the machines meant and why she needed different medications. They made death bearable. I was 14 when she died, and I knew then that I wanted to give other families what those nurses had given us. My path was never going to be straightforward. Dad drove buses for Stagecoach and Mum worked as a teaching assistant until cancer took over her world when I was 16. I left school to care for her, and after she recovered, I started work as a healthcare assistant. For 8 years, I was the person who helped patients wash and dress, who listened when they were scared at 3 a.m., who held the phone so they could hear their grandchildren's voices. I loved the work, but I wanted to do more. I wanted to assess symptoms, administer medications, make the clinical decisions that could save lives. I needed to become a registered nurse. While working full-time, I studied for my GCSEs and A-levels through evening classes at Peterborough Regional College. It took me 5 years, but by 2019, I had the qualifications I needed. I applied through UCAS and got offers from Anglia Ruskin University and University of Hertfordshire. Both programmes looked excellent. Both would train me to do exactly what the NHS desperately needed. Then I contacted Health Education England about funding. The woman on the phone was polite but firm. "There are no commissioned places available for the East of England region this year," she said. "The budget has been capped by Treasury spending limits." She explained that while universities could offer places, Health Education England could only fund a fixed number of students each year. Without their funding, I would need to find £9,000 per year plus living costs. On a healthcare assistant's wages, supporting myself and helping my parents, that was impossible. I tried again in 2020. Same conversation, same outcome. The administrator sounded genuinely sorry. "I understand your frustration," she said, "but there is no funding." In 2021, I called again. This time I was told the pandemic had made everything more complicated, but the result was identical. "We cannot afford to run that program at full capacity," the voice explained. By 2022, I was starting to feel desperate. I approached Peterborough and Stamford Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust directly, hoping they might have apprenticeship routes I had missed. The workforce development manager was helpful but blunt. "We would love to train more nurses," she said, "but we can't create training positions without Health Education England funding. Our hands are tied." Everyone I spoke to seemed reasonable. Everyone seemed genuinely concerned about nursing shortages. Everyone seemed to want to help. But everywhere I turned, the same phrase appeared: "There is no funding." It sounded logical. It sounded like an immutable fact, like gravity or the speed of light. Then, in 2023, I attended an open day at Anglia Ruskin's Chelmsford campus. I wanted to see the facilities for myself, to understand what I was missing. What I found changed everything I thought I knew about shortage and scarcity. I walked through lecture theatres that could seat 60 students but contained only 20. I saw simulation labs equipped with the latest mannequins and monitoring equipment, sitting empty during what should have been peak teaching hours. The corridors that should have been full of nursing students learning to save lives were eerily quiet. At the end of the tour, I asked the admissions tutor why the spaces were so empty. She looked around to make sure no one else was listening, then said quietly, "We have capacity for 40 more nursing students this year, but no funding to fill the places. The clinical placements are available. The academic staff are here. The equipment is waiting. But Health Education England's budget won't stretch to more commissioned places." That moment broke something open in my mind. I stood in a purpose-built training facility designed to produce exactly the nurses that hospitals across the region were crying out for, watching it operate at half capacity because someone, somewhere, had decided that there was no money. But the money was never the real constraint, was it? The lecturers existed. The simulation labs existed. The hospital wards desperate for staff existed. The people like me, ready to train and serve, existed. The government that prints every pound note and mints every coin in circulation had told me it could not find enough of its own currency to train the nurses it desperately needed. That was not an accounting problem. That was a political choice wrapped in the language of financial impossibility. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that issues the currency told me it could not afford to spend that currency on training people to save lives. But when I stood in those empty lecture theatres, I understood that the real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, they did. Whether the skills could be taught, they could. Whether the facilities were available, they were. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice dressed up as an impossibility. When HM Treasury sets spending limits on Health Education England, it is not discovering a natural constraint, it is creating an artificial one. The limit was never the pounds. The limit was the willingness to deploy those pounds into the training programmes that would connect willing people to urgent work. I am still here, still working as a healthcare assistant, still watching. But now I understand that what happened to me is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where the resources exist, the need exists, the people exist, but someone in Whitehall has decided that connecting them would cost too much of a currency that government issues without limit. The cupboard was never bare. The political will was what was missing.
What Vanessa experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound to public investment, a standard never applied to bank bailouts or corporate tax cuts. Think of someone refusing to water their garden unless you can guarantee that every drop will produce a flower. That would be absurd. Gardens need consistent watering, and some water will always be absorbed by soil or lost to evaporation. But the principle is sound. Water the garden, and most plants will grow. In Vanessa's story, this technique appeared every time officials demanded certainty that training investment would produce perfect outcomes. Health Education England treated nurse training as though every pound spent must generate a guaranteed return, ignoring the overwhelming evidence that trained nurses save lives and reduce healthcare costs. Meanwhile, Treasury spending on bank support or defence contracts faces no such scrutiny. The austerity objection claims the NHS is a bottomless pit. We cannot keep throwing money at it. This sets an impossible standard where no amount of evidence of need is ever sufficient. No service is bottomless. NHS costs are measurable, and the UK spends less per capita on health than France, Germany, or the Netherlands. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, well, not financial. Peterborough ranks 38 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile. 1. The constituency has 430 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £4.3 million, according to 360, giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional, every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.